A symphony should contain the world. Composer Gustav Mahler said that to one of his fellow composers, and he lived up to his own admonition. Mahler's Symphony No. 2, the Resurrection Symphony, is one of his all-embracing works. It uses more than a full orchestra, extra horns in particular, and offstage players, a chorus, soloists playing a chorale, dance music, a funeral march, plain chant, and more, all telling the story of all life and death in an existential and spiritual context. What more could you want from a single piece of music? It's one of classical music's most ambitious and successful grand stories. Our critic Ted Libby is here to choose a recording of Mahler's second for our collection of essential CDs. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Fred.
Ted, I see you've picked a recording conducted by a man whose name became almost synonymous with Mahler in the mid-1900s here in this country, conducting one of Mahler's own orchestras, in a sense.
Makes sense, doesn't it, to have Leonard Bernstein represent Mahler and to do it with the New York Philharmonic, which was his orchestra and also Mahler's orchestra. Well, you said a mouthful at the start, Fred, but that's really the case with this symphony. It is a whole world, just as Mahler hoped to make it. And it's the symphony with which Mahler answered the metaphysical challenge of Beethoven's Ninth. And there are a lot of similarities along the way. The turbulent beginning, the vast exploration of musical territory in the middle of the work, and the triumphant conclusion.
Now, this is an expansive piece in a particularly expansive performance here from Bernstein and the New York Phil, more than an hour and a half. We don't have time to focus on the entire piece. We're going to focus in on the last movement of the piece, the fifth movement. And Ted, we're just about to sample a section from the middle of the final movement, beginning with some offstage trumpets. What's going on in this section?
Well, it's pretty remarkable. Mahler said that the movement that precedes this should be sung as though by a child in heaven. But heaven hasn't been stormed yet, and that's the job of the final movement, all 38 and a half minutes of it in this performance. And we get to the part where the ramparts are being climbed, and we're hearing all kinds of noise and confusion of battle and trumpets sounding from different sides of the stage. One of Mahler's favorite devices was to use offstage instruments to explode the musical space, to engulf the listener in something beyond even the reaches of the concert hall. The idea here is that we're preparing for the great final call in which all of creation is stilled to silence. But before that can happen, you have sort of the four horsemen of the apocalypse running around loose, and this is what it sounds like.
We can hear those trumpets coming from different directions, as you said, exploding the musical space. But there are also some very emotive strings here. The violin section is playing with very, what I would think of as personal phrasing, what one violinist would do, but they're all doing it together.
Yeah, that was Lenny's great gift. That was what he could get an orchestra to do. Here, the music for the first violins is split into octaves, and the notation is very, very clear. There are all of these dynamic accents that Mahler wants. And what Bernstein and the Philharmonic players do is they achieve them by a little bit of extra vibrato so that those notes come out. And there's such a sense of intensity and yearning and kind of urgency to the music, but they all play it together. You can only imagine Bernstein on the podium communing with the violins at this moment and with all of his body English that he was capable of doing. They knew exactly what he wanted, and the result is this incredible realization of the music.
Well, after the heavens have been stormed, we finally get to this remarkable climax. The entire piece takes an hour and a half to reach what we're just about to hear. This is the long-awaited resurrection?
This is the resurrection. It's actually the title of the ode that is set here. The chorus has been waiting in the risers for the better part of that hour and a half, and they finally get their moment, and they come in at the beginning very, very softly and very low, and you would hardly know that they're singing. Gradually, they grow in force, and then the solo voices emerge from that, and the thing just takes wing and soars until at the very end of the piece, which is what we're going to hear, You have everybody singing and playing with the greatest force, a concluding triumphant resurrection hymn, the words, "I must die so that I may live."
Thou shalt rise again, my heart, in the twinkling of an eye. What thou hast fought for shall lead thee to God. The deep bells, the organ, the entire orchestra, the New York Philharmonic, and the voices of the Westminster Choir, all led by Leonard Bernstein, in that 1987 recording, the conclusion there of Mahler's Symphony No. 2. Now, we'll hear the entire last movement now, which is longer than quite a few entire symphonies in this version from Leonard Bernstein. This movement begins with a huge blast and tumult and then takes us into a finely wrought musical argument for 38 minutes after that. Leonard Bernstein leading the New York Philharmonic and the Westminster Choir. The soloists are Barbara Hendricks and Christa Ludwig. Mahler's Symphony No. 2. Ted Libby, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Fred.